The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
We have our sponsor, Brickhouse Nutrition.
Yeah, Brickhouse is the savior of my life right now because I don't have to eat greens. I hate salads. I hate vegetables. I hate them. I will not eat them in a box or with a fox, but I will drink them down.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the easy way to do it.
Shockingly, Brickhouse Nutrition doesn't necessarily recommend you stop eating all vegetables.
I do.
This is, if you're like Glenn or most males in the audience, you may want to try Field of Greens because you get all the nutrients and stuff that you need. You can go through the whole eat your vegetables thing that your mom told you to do and you never did. You can do that with one scoop and juice or milk
or
water.
Fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to eat any of that crap. I could eat steak and chocolate.
Again, that's not what they recommend. But for a limited time, go to BrickHouseGlenn.com. Use the promo code Glenn. Get 15% off your first order. BrickHouseGlenn.com. Experience a better you tomorrow.
Glenn Beck.
The personal is political. That was a slogan used by the feminists in the 1960s. And like most slogans, you know, it really kind of starts to fall apart once you examine it long enough, but it's generally meant to understood as women and minorities and the struggles that they face directly connected to the patriarchy. And it has come to take on many more meanings, but most of all, it's just a way to say, my feelings equal truth. They don't. Now the personal is so political that the political has become personal, and it is everywhere. Thanks to the radically left-leaning forefathers of postmodernism, every single word we utter now is political. So if anything we say offends someone on the left, it's not just personal, it is a political act. Even worse, having a difference in opinion is a personal insult now. We're seeing it constantly. Ted Cruz heckled out of a restaurant. Sarah Sanders kicked out of a restaurant. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi chased out of a movie about Mr. Rogers. The entire Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, for that matter. And it is escalating. Verbal abuse isn't good enough, as we saw last week with Antifa protesters who broke down Tucker Carlson's front door and screamed threats. Yesterday, Michael Avenatti claimed on Twitter that he is investigating Tucker Carlson for an alleged assault on a gay Latino immigrant. Well, this sounds about as plausible as Avenatti's ridiculous claim that Brett Kavanaugh was a serial rapist in high school. Tucker Carlson responded. As is expected, Avenatti wasn't telling the truth, it seems. Officials from the Farmington Country Club, where the incident happened, have confirmed it now. They revoked the man's membership that night. Turns out he was the aggressor. Turns out Tucker Carlson was at dinner with his kids and some friends when his teenage daughter went to the restroom and came back to the table crying. Apparently, the middle-aged man said to Tucker Carlson's daughter, "Are you having dinner with Tucker Carlson?" And she said, "Yes, that's my father." He said, "Oh, you're Tucker's whore." Then he said, "You're an effing C-word." She came back to the table and started to cry. Her brother immediately got up from the table and said, "Excuse me, did you just say this to my sister?" He proudly admitted that he had, and the son, or the brother, took a glass of wine and threw it at him. Carlson wrote, "I love my children. It took enormous self-control not to beat the man with a chair, which is what I wanted to do. I think any father can understand the overwhelming rage and shock that I felt seeing my teenage daughter attacked by a stranger." After his son threw wine, Tucker Carlson got up, and he asked the guy to please leave. They were restrained. Tucker said, "I restrained myself. I didn't assault the man. Neither did my son." He said, "Everything about this is a lie. First of all, I didn't know that the man was gay or Latino. Not that it would have even mattered. What happened on October 13th has nothing to do with identity politics. It was a gross violation of decency. I've never seen anything like it in my life, end quote. This is what I experienced with my family a few years ago in New York. It is the reason in the end that really compelled us to seriously talk about leaving New York. My family was endangered by a crowd of people, and they all thought it was funny. The political is personal. A middle-aged man feels so personally insulted and outraged by Tucker Carlson's political views, his different opinions, that he responds with a personal insult to Tucker Carlson's daughter, using the C word. Is this the world that the early feminists with their personal is political signs wanted? How many things have gotten so turned around that it's considered progressive now for a grown man to call a teenage girl the C word? Which I believe is one of the most heinous and degrading words ever used to demean women. Tucker was right to restrain himself. The country club was right for asking this guy to leave and to revoke his membership. It's the best response. Violence is not the answer. We have to keep our head, and it is going to be unbelievably hard sometimes. It gets a little harder every time we see something like what happened to Tucker Carlson. But it is the only way to win. Not everything is personal. Not everything is political. And that is the reality. And your feelings do not equal truth. They are your feelings. Hopefully, if we can keep our composure long enough, hopefully they'll find a better slogan, one that calms people down instead of inciting outrage. In the meantime, we can all agree that no one at all, especially a grown man, should verbally assault a teenage girl because her daddy hurt his feelings.
It's Monday, November 12th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I, for one, am so sick and tired of hearing from the left that, oh my gosh, they've never experienced hatred like this. Nobody said a word when my family was assaulted in a park in New York. No one said a word. My daughter and I had always wanted to go see a Hitchcock film in the park. And so we did. And I just thought it was going to be fine. I just assumed that everybody was human still. Well, not in New York. And so my daughter and her then fiance and my wife decided to go to the park, and we just spread out a blanket, and we arrived, you know, maybe a little bit early. People started to come, and this group behind us of these 20-somethings, women, believe it or not, they were quite aggressive. They threw wine on my wife. My wife knew that it wasn't an accident because we had security there and they were able to see their Twitter feed and their Facebook feed where they were admitting what they were doing. I went to the park with, I think, one security agent. By the time we were done, I think we had four. We may have had six by the end. I finally leave towards the end of the movie. I want to get out of there before the movie is over, for obvious reasons. And I get up with my wife, and the entire crowd applauds that we leave. Now, that could have been, I could have, you know, taken that. But not after you had assaulted my wife. not after my wife and my daughter walk about half a block to go to the restroom. And as they are walking by themselves, they are shouted at and fingers pointed and thrust into their chest saying, we don't want your hate here. We don't want your kind here. Racist, bigots, haters. When we were walking out, by the time we got across the street, I looked at the security agents and I said, go back and get my daughter and her fiance. This is far too dangerous for them. My daughter was already in tears. She didn't know what to do when the security agents arrived and pulled them both into the car. So please, leftists, CNN, don't tell me how hard your life is. I know. I know how hard your life is now, and no one should have to live through that. But what's happening to Tucker Carlson is not an isolated incident. It's been happening from the left for a very long time. And it goes beyond mean tweets. Your family is in danger. And it's only getting worse. So what are we going to do about it? Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to live our lives. We're going to tell the truth. We're not going to play the game that they're playing because I don't want to be that person. I remember leaving that crowd and saying to my wife, I would be so ashamed if anyone in my audience treated people like that. If Michael Moore, who was at the top of the, you know, I guess, hate list for the left, if Michael Moore would have been treated like that by my audience, I would have been horrified. But I slept well that night knowing my audience wouldn't do that. It's one of the reasons why we did Restoring Love. I wanted to see a big, huge crowd fill Dallas Cowboy Stadium and treat people with respect and come together and be good and serve one another and serve the community. The press seems to miss all of that. That's okay. That's okay. We know who they are. By the way, the California fires. I saw all the tweets back and forth and the hatred about the fires and Donald Trump. And shut up. Shut up. Meanwhile, there are people on the ground. Meanwhile, there are people that are in trouble. And I don't mean the celebrities because they have enough money to take care of themselves and get out. I don't wish them ill, and I don't wish that their houses are burned down or anything like that. But I'm concerned about the people who have to leave their house and they don't know what to do, where to go. How do you take your children, leave your house, lose everything, and survive? You go to work? How do you afford just going to a hotel, just having meals three times a day for your family out? How quickly does that bill run you into bankruptcy? Mercury One is already on the ground in California, and there are a lot of people in need. I want to play a tape. This is of a father talking to his daughter and trying to calm them down. Now, if you happen to be watching the blaze, you will see it. But if you're just listening, let me describe the scene. There are flames on both sides of the car. It's all like they're going through a tunnel of fire. And the little girl is starting to freak out. And I want you to listen to this amazing father as he talks her through this. Because you know inside, he ain't feeling this way. Listen to this.
Hey, guess what? We're not going to catch on fire, okay? We're going to stay away from it. And we'll be just fine. Okay? We're doing all right.
flames on both sides of the car.
Baby, it'll be all right. We should. We're gonna.
We should go back home. We should go back home.
We're gonna get out, okay? We're gonna leave.
But we're gonna get fire.
No, we're gonna get out of here. And we'll come back when it's more Princess Poppy, okay?
Princess Poppy gonna take the fire?
I'm gonna stay away from it, okay? Yeah.
There's that fire.
Yep.
Over that fire.
Look, we're past it. We're out of it, okay?
Yay!
Yay!
You did it!
We did it together.
I'm listening to this, and I know that I would be tempted to be quiet. Daddy's driving. Daddy's trying to make sure we don't all die. Quiet.
Keep talking and you'll be on fire because I'll open the door and put you out.
Amazing, amazing father. Not only our thoughts and prayers, which are valuable, go out to the people of California, but also our backs and our hands and our feet. We're putting our money where our mouth is. We care about you, California. Mercury One is out on the ground now. I urge you to donate now. Help feed these people. Help shelter these people. You can go to mercuryone.org and make a donation now and help those who are affected by fires. mercuryone.org. Well, Thanksgiving is it next week? Next week, isn't it? That's incredible. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. If you have plans, I know you're not going to be somebody's dinner table that is going to miss you. Have you thought about sending flowers? 1-800-Flowers.com. Use the promo code Beck right now. Perfect way to show family and friends just how much you're thinking about them. And right now you have 24 for 24. 24 multicolored roses for $24. That's a dollar per rose. That's a really good price. A bouquet of bright multicolored roses is a perfect gift that will bring smiles for all fall celebrations. They'll show your friends and your loved ones just how much they mean to you around this special time of year. It's 1-800-Flowers.com, 1-800-Flowers.com. Get this bouquet 24 for 24. All you have to do is go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click on the radio microphone, and you click on that icon, and you enter the promo code Beck. That's 1-800-Flowers.com, promo code Beck after you click on the radio icon, 1-800-Flowers.com. These California wildfires are just terrifying. 31 dead statewide now in California. Like I said, Mercury One is on the ground now, and we're having our big fundraiser. We do one fundraiser a year just to pay for the staff and the airplane tickets and all of the crap that you don't want to raise money for during the year. You want 100% of whatever you're donating to go to the wildfires or the hurricanes or to the Nazarene Fund. This is why we have this big fundraiser, and we have a lot of people coming to the ball this, I think it's this Friday. Is it this Friday night?
Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. That may be sold out, but we have these raffle tickets. You can win a brand new Mercedes.
Ah, I would like a car. Yes, I want a car.
Okay, I'd like to help people.
I want a car.
I'd like to help people.
I'd like to help one person, me, with a car.
Well, this is your chance to do both.
It's my understanding, and I have not confirmed this yet, but if you would like to purchase a raffle ticket and you would like to, as part of that, designate the car, if won, to me, Stu, you can do that by contacting Mercury One. Let them know you bought the ticket and you'd like to give the car to Stu and pay the taxes on your own, if applicable, for the transfer.
By the way, you do not have to be there to win. Last year, we flew the winners in. And they drove their brand new truck here out of the studios. We had them in the studios. And this year, it's a brand new Mercedes. You don't have to be there to win. The raffle ticket goes to a good cause. It goes to keep the people employed at Mercury One that are are there to make sure that we're
doing all the work,
freeing slaves in Syria and fighting, you know, hunger someplace else, helping the people in the hurricanes or in the wildfires. So please just go to mercuryone.org and you can find the raffle ticket at mercuryone.org/M1ball.
It's going to be fun. That's actually a fun event.
Yeah. Chuck and Gina are going to be there. Chuck Norris and his wife are going to be there. We have a couple of people. We have, what's her name from Housewives of Dallas. She's going to be there. We have a couple of big country musical artists coming as well. I'm sorry, I just don't have all of it, but it's going to be fun. And we are also we are auctioning off the only digital copy ever made. The only other copy that has been made of this was made in Abraham Lincoln's own hand. The only copy ever for sale for auction at Mercury One of the Gettysburg Address. You can find out all of that at mercuryone.org.
Mercury.
It is. It's crazy what is happening with the ballots. We're going to get to the election and the recounts now. This is dramatically changing things. And I'm not sure anybody really understands what's going on. I'm not sure. Are we sure that everything is on the up and up here? Who's really watching over this? Is anybody? We'll talk about that coming up in just a minute. We also have Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed, which is a podcast that you can hear wherever you get your podcasts or listen on the Blaze Radio Network immediately preceding this program. Welcome, Pat. How are you?
Good.
Good. Good.
Doing good.
Yeah.
You want to start with the fun stuff or the serious stuff?
Let's start with fun stuff because...
Okay.
Is that more on trivia?
More on trivia.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Here's more on trivia.
Global warming typically refers to the warming of what planet?
Oh my gosh, it's hard.
Dang it. Usually
I don't know. Pluto?
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 Same solar system, so you were close.
You're close. It's right there.
Uranus.
Right there.
Yeah, Uranus.
Wow.
So, yeah, the weather's changing on Uranus.
It's getting warmer.
What is socialism?
Oh, whoa.
A little premature there on the buzzer, but maybe. I know it's coming.
Maybe.
Socializing?
Yeah. Socializing?
See, you were premature on the buzzer.
Every time. I was premature.
Nobody ever gets that.
No, it's a disease you get from being too social with someone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Have you ever been too social with someone?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too, Jessica. Okay. Me
all
too.
Right. We won't pry into the details. Well, maybe we will. What were the details? What happened?
Oh, my gosh.
Is that amazing?
What planet?
Incredible.
Global warming. What planet?
Right. Yes. And you don't know that. And like the socialism thing, I think there's been... We ask that almost every week for a couple years now.
And then
I think there's been one, maybe two people who have actually known what it is. So no wonder it's...
Popular.
Popular.
I love the things I don't know what they are.
Yes. Right. Yes.
I love the global warming question in which she picked the one planet that is questionably not even
not
a planet.
Not even a planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Global warming is also the coldest. It might be just a hunk of ice.
And that's every Friday you play that on Pat Gray Unleashed.
Every Friday in the second hour.
Okay.
But also, we are 8-2 on the season.
Amazing.
Now. 8-2 was right again.
Don't want to miss it. Every Friday it happens live. Pat will bring a taste of it in every Monday.
So have you seen Alabama is really putting up the good fight for life? They're trying their best to allow children to be born. And there's so few states doing it. There's so few of us that are really... engaged in the battle. I just admire the fact that they're doing this. There's the Alabama Supreme Court just upheld the state's fetal homicide law, which is that if you kill a pregnant woman, mm-hmm. you're charged with a double homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the double homicide that allows mm-hmm. the death penalty to kick in And they just upheld that. And one of the justices on the court, Justice Tom Parker, said it's a logical fallacy for the government to consider a fetus for the purposes of a murder conviction, but not when it comes to a woman deciding to end her pregnancy. That's going to have to be decided now by the Supreme Court. They're going to have to man up and make this ruling on when life begins. Does it begin at inception, or does it begin in the birth canal?
No, it's choice. It begins at the choice. If the woman was on her way to an abortion clinic and she lost her baby, mm-hmm. would she be charged with the person who
of course not.
You know, was drunk driving? Would they be charged with double homicide? I think it's a choice. I really believe if you've made the choice, then it's the only one that can make the choice. So I think you'd get double homicide if you were in an accident by a drunk driver. He would be charged with double homicide.
Yes.
If you were on your way to Planned Parenthood.
Yes. Or, you know, manslaughter mm-hmm. of two people.
Yeah.
And I think that's happened. And it just usually the left even considers the baby inside being murdered
because it's a choice.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you seen the greatest example of good being turned into evil and evil being good? I saw in a video this weekend of this cute little baby that mm-hmm. deserves to be loved, deserves to be wanted, deserves to be a choice.
It's despicable. It's a Planned Parenthood ad?
It's actually not.
It's not Planned Parenthood?
By them. No,
I thought it was
Planned
Parenthood.
It's in support of Planned Parenthood, but made by a different group.
So like a PAC or something did that. It's interesting, though, that they're not even trying to say it's tissue anymore. They show this beautiful baby over and over and over during the commercial. So you're acknowledging. Okay, that's human life. That's a baby, right? But you should choose to be able to kill this baby if you want.
Wow.
Amazing.
What kind of society would do that?
There's part of me that commends the ad. Like, here's...
At least it's
finally
honest.
They're actually saying what's happening. At least they're admitting it. If you can get past that ad and still be pro-abortion, I mean, at least you're freaking committed to it. They're not... At least they're not lying.
Isn't that mm-hmm. the scary thing? They weren't honest about it mm-hmm. when they didn't think that people would go their way. They are so convinced now that people...
Either that or they're just tired of hiding. You know, like you mentioned, they're going to claim they're socialists. They're just going to admit it. They're doing that. And now they're just admitting, this is human life. We just think you should be able to kill it.
Aren't we awesome? Yeah, a couple million of these are going away every year.
Every year.
It's pretty awesome of us, huh?
62 million in the mm-hmm. last 45 years, and it's not a problem for us. That's more than Mao killed.
Isn't it in some way, though, a more morally consistent argument than the typical pro-choice person who would not admit that? The typical mm-hmm. pro-choice person is going to be turned off by an ad like that.
Look,
but you're saying like, oh, well, it's a choice, though, and therefore I have to let someone else make it, even though I know what's going on. I'm against abortion personally, but it's okay for us to allow it as a society. That is a much less morally consistent viewpoint than the one made by that ad, who's saying, we're killing babies. Yes, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
We're completely fine with it.
Yes.
And we should encourage it and praise us for it.
It's Debbie Wasserman Schultz not being able to admit that her children were children before they were born.
They're children now.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah,
that's crazy talk. And it makes no sense, and they know it makes no sense. So I guess for some it will be a relief, a blessed relief, that they don't have to lie anymore. Yes, of course we know. I mean, we're the science deniers. We're the science deniers. That's not a baby before it's born. Really? So, you know, now I guess it might be somewhat of a relief to those who know this is a baby and we've been lying about it. We just think it's okay to kill it. And it is a shocking, I tweeted it over the weekend. Maybe I'll retweet it, or Stu, you can retweet it. It's a shocking video. And mm-hmm. what is, to me, it looks as though it was designed to appeal to a woman.
Yeah.
If women mm-hmm. go down this road and have so lost their maternal instinct, that instinct to protect a baby, you know, to, when you see a baby, you know, guys don't always, they don't turn to Jell-O all the time, but women usually do. And a baby is a baby. And to see that baby and to say deserves to be a choice, if women go down this road, we are truly lost.
Doesn't get much lower than that.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, morally reprehensible in the same way slavery was morally reprehensible for the people of that time. Because it's such a similar issue to me. It's so overtly, obviously wrong to me to look at, hey, we're just, you know, look, it's a choice. You know, you're going to end the lives of these babies, a couple million a year, and we're just not going to talk about it at all because it's uncomfortable. I would assume back in the day, in the time of slavery, there were a lot of people who were, you know, there's Benjamin Franklin who absolutely, you know, grasped the moral horror of what slavery was. And there were some people who, you know, from the South who were absolutely defended to the death. But there were a lot of people who were, you know, I don't know, it's legal. Like the government like acceptance of it gives people an argument to not have to think about it.
Correct.
And that's why it's so awful. Because anyone in 100 years and 200 years, anyone who thinks about this and said, wait, what were they doing? They were just they were just killing all these kids, like millions of them. How the heck did people stand by and be okay with that?
Yeah.
And it's because the government acceptance of it. And I think this happened in Nazi Germany, too. People, you know, they're harassing the Jews, but the government accept. They said it was okay. It was legal. You could do it. And so people looked the other way, even though they knew, I think, in their heart, that can't possibly be the right thing to do.
So I agree with you. I agree with you to some degree with the Jews in Germany. But I just want to point out, when it came to killing children, when Hitler actually started doing that, the people rose up.
The people
who voted for Adolf Hitler, the people who were fighting in his armies when he started killing children, even those people rose up and said, this is too far.
And we're not there right now.
Yeah.
And there's never, to me, I don't know that we've ever had a better opportunity than now to try to do something about Roe v. Wade. We've got five justices who should logically vote the right way on this.
If you push the issue
all the way to the Supreme Court.
I'm not convinced that John Roberts is going to be like
I'm not
that.
Either.
Oh, and you should have seen either. Did you see the article this week? I know I pulled it, but I don't know where it is.
He's going to go left.
They said so far Kavanaugh seems to be distancing himself from Gorsuch and siding more with John Roberts. Jeez. And this would be, I mean, again, remember, we said this 100 times during this process. Brett Kavanaugh was not on the original list of Supreme Court justices that Trump put out before the election.
Right.
He was not on it. They added him afterwards. And that was a huge problem for all of us because one of the big reason why a huge portion of this audience voted for Donald Trump was because of that list. That list of 21 Supreme Court justices. They didn't have Brett Kavanaugh on there. And now, I mean, like, look, he was qualified justice, should have been put through, had nothing to do with him being a gang rapist. But I was very nervous of him because of the way he would actually rule in these cases. I really hope that's not going to come true. And maybe it's very early. It's too early to know for sure. But I can't say I'm not nervous about it. I can't say I'm not nervous about it. And if they don't get
We've been nervous about him. I didn't like him from the beginning.
From day one. Day one. Same thing. Same thing on that.
Only because he just wasn't a constitutionalist. He's just not a strict constitutionalist. And not sure how he will rule. I didn't like the fact that he, you know, hangs around a lot of Jesuits. And, you know, no offense to the Catholic Church,
they're usually progressive, though.
Anybody who is Catholic and knows Jesuits knows they are wildly progressive. Why? I mean, the Pope is a Jesuit. So, I mean, you kind of, you know, that's what you're getting. Mm-hmm. I hope we don't have that with Kavanaugh. Pat, thank you so much. So you're in a wildfire. We just heard that father comfort his daughter. Could you play the other woman who is in the car and she is praying? Can you play that real quick for me, Sarah?
Oh my God! Oh my
fire
God.
Is on
Please
both
God.
Sides of her.
Please God! Oh my God!
What are these people?
Oh my God! Please leave the horses there. Please.
How are these people surviving? Where is she going? Where is she going to be eating? Where is she going to be feeding her family? How is she going to afford that? Unless, I mean, that's just a devastating toll on your family. Please prepare for any disaster. It could be anything. It could be just an unexpected major medical bill. Please prepare. My Patriot Supply will help you. They're offering their lowest price of the year on two popular emergency food kits. You just go to preparewithglenn.com. It's the lowest price of the year. The food kits include breakfast, lunch, and dinners that last up to 25 years in storage. Prepare yourself for any eventuality and be self-reliant. Go to preparewithglenn.com, preparewithglenn.com, or call 800-200-7163. Let me go to Kurt. Hello, Kurt. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Glenn. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Good. Hey, you were talking about the fires earlier. My son goes to Pepperdine, and he was part of your leadership last summer.
Oh, my gosh.
Last one you guys did. It's pretty great.
Great.
But when he got out there, he called us the other day, and we were going out for Thanksgiving because we wanted to be able to spend some time with him and not pull him away from his study.
Sure.
And we had an Airbnb. There's several canyons that line around Pepperdine.
Sure.
And we had an Airbnb place. They canceled school because so many of the employees' folks have been damaged by the fire. They lost everything. So we called and asked him on Saturday, are you coming home or what do you want to do? He says, yeah, I'm coming home. So we went to cancel our Airbnb. I pulled up this my reservation and it said it's been canceled by the host. So I sent this lady a question, hey, are you guys okay? She sent something back. We've been devastated. Our whole house, everything we have is gone.
It is. I mean, California is the most beautiful place, but I tell you, I think it's the most dangerous state in the union to live. It is just horrifying what they have gone through recently. And these fires are I think, beyond. Would you agree with this? Beyond hurricane understanding? Hurricanes are just devastating. But this just moves in with no warning. And
yeah, you at least have the warning with a hurricane. I mean, it's more tornado-ish, but over a much wider...
Yeah.
I mean, you go to bed and you wake up and it's your house is gone.
At one point over the weekend, it was consuming 80 football fields a minute.
Oh, my God.
A minute. Mm. Our thoughts, prayers, and Mercury One on the ground for California wildfires.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
We want to talk to you a little bit about Relief Factor. I want to talk to you about life-changing Relief Factor. For 4 years now, we've had people at the building here in Dallas taking Relief Factor, and it is I've watched them get out of pain. I started taking it about a year ago, and I have to tell you, the pain I have been dealing with has been debilitating. And I just couldn't take medicine from the doctor anymore. This is 100% drug-free, created by doctors. It helps your body fight against inflation, which is where most of our pain comes from. You can do the 3-week quick start, which is what I did. Try it for 3 weeks. If it doesn't work, then you're only out like, what, $20. If it does work, you have your life back. And 70% of the people who order the 3-week quick start go on to order more month after month. And that says everything to me. May not work for you. It did work for me. And it's working for 70% of the people who order it every single month after they try it for 3 weeks. Go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com and order it now.
Glenn Beck.
This is the sound of an angry mob in Pakistan. And they are demanding the execution of a Christian woman for blasphemy. If you're a Christian in the world today, welcome to the first century. Oh, this in Pakistan. Well, yes, it is. And if we continue to have this blasé attitude, the ravenous calls for death of anyone simply for their religious belief. I don't care if it is in China, and we are talking about the Muslims that are being rounded up in China now, a million of them in a re-education camp. A million. People are just disappearing. The Chinese are taking on the Christians as well. Christians in Pakistan, Christians in the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, people who just will not accept Islam in Northern Africa. Remember the hashtag, bring our children back? Yeah, that did a lot, didn't it? It did nothing. This morning, I urge you to put a sign up in your front door of your business, tweet, Facebook. We are all this Pakistani Christian woman today. We must be. If you're not hearing about her plight in church, you should be. We have come full circle, where the persecution that Jesus and his apostles in the first century had to endure by the Romans, it's now again standard fare in places like the Middle East. But the cowardice I saw from our cousins in the United Kingdom is what truly has horrified me. It is rare to be a witness to such a cowardly act that the British have just committed, and it all centers around this young woman from Pakistan. Here's her story. Asia Bibi, she was picking berries with a few other farm workers in a remote Pakistani field, and this is in 2009. A supervisor asked her to get some water. Well, her life changed forever. You see, Christians in Pakistan have always been on the receiving end of bigotry and persecution. So it probably wasn't a surprise to Asia when two Muslim women began to fight with her, saying that they would not drink from anything that had been touched by a Christian. But it then spun out of control when the two Muslim women claimed she had insulted Muhammad, a crime punishable by death. Now, there are no witnesses. No one can verify this claim, but she has been in prison since 2009. Now, Pakistan's Supreme Court just acquitted her and set her free. Apparently, this is the kind of bad precedent that you don't want to do if you're in Pakistan. You have to condemn a person to death based off hearsay if it involves the Prophet Muhammad. Well, the Supreme Court said no to that, but the mob didn't care. They wanted blood, and they have been out in the streets demanding Asia's death. Crucify her. Now, the only chance she has is for her and her family to get the heck out of Dodge before the mob takes justice into their own hands. So you would think that asylum would be an easy slam dunk. I mean, after all, Europe has been taking refugees in by the millions, quite literally by the millions. So why wouldn't they take another refugee from Pakistan? Well, the UK decided not to grant her asylum because they fear, quote, unrest that might spring up in the British streets from certain areas of our population. Okay, what you're fearing, let me translate British bullcrap into English. What the British are saying is, we have so many Islamists, not Muslims, Islamists here that we have taken in, and they really control our streets. We are too cowardly to even take on the sex ring gangs that are targeting British children. We're too afraid of the Islamists to even do anything about that. The last thing we can do is help this Christian. Because we're afraid. That's really what the British are saying. Where are the people that once said, we shall fight on the beaches? We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. Where are those people? Where is that courage? Where is that decency? If you want to know what true manifested cowardice is, I give you today's British government. It pains me to say it. And to the women's marchers and the new wave feminists, if you want to know what a real war on women is and real bigotry, try being a woman, and God forbid, a Christian woman in a place like Pakistan. And now, apparently, in places like the UK. History will say shame on them. Shame on them. If we don't step in and be who we always have been. The MS St. Louis is a black stain on our history. A group of Jewish immigrants who were being targeted by the Nazis. They went to every country in the Western Hemisphere, including us, and we turned them around. We sent them back to their death. Let's not do it again. President Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, I beg you, please, grant this woman and her family immediate asylum here in the United States. Now is the time to stand and lead and show the world our compassion and how great we are because we stand for people who are truly targeted. If we fail to stand for this Muslim woman and her family, Christian woman and her family, who is going to die. She will die. If we don't stand for her, what are we all fighting about? What are we all fighting for? What are we all trying to save? What are we trying to convince our friends and family that America is important if we won't stand for her? And should we fail, the world is showing us right now, no one will do it in our absence.
It's Monday, November 12th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Please call the White House, tweet the White House, Facebook the White House, Facebook your members of Congress. We must help this woman. We must help this woman. And you know what? It's a great way to show that we are not afraid of people who look different than us. We're not afraid of immigrants. We're not tone deaf to those who actually need asylum. Please, Mr. President, please, please. This should be a slam dunk, for it just has to get to the president, because this is a slam dunk for him. This is a way that he can show that he's not racist, show that he's not afraid of immigrants, you know, and take a firm stand against the Islamists. We cannot cower. Great Britain is lost. It's lost. When it's afraid to actually say the real reason in plain language, we're afraid of our own immigrant population. That's terrifying. Her name is Asia Bibi, B-I-B-I, Asia Bibi. Keep her in your prayers, and please do everything you can to get the attention of those in Washington that can grant her immediate asylum. She could be dead by tomorrow if they don't get her and her family out of there.
So one thing, too, that Mike Pence has been big on his, for much longer than he's been vice president.
Yes.
Making sure that these things get handled correctly. And I got it. It's one of those things that I think if a big enough deal is made of it,
yes,
they will do the right thing. On
yes, I think they will. I think they will. Okay, we want to talk a little bit about the news of the day and also some gun stats, because gun laws are on the way. The House says they are going to do everything they can under Pelosi to make sure that they have common sense gun control. So we're going to get into that when we come back. First, if I can tell you about our sponsor this half hour, it's American Finance. If you're having financial problems, you may be solicited by credit repair services to settle your debts for less. But there are costs involved in that, high cost, including fees to the settlement company and taxes on your debt write-off. So don't be fooled. Make sure that if you're looking for debt consolidation or a lowering of your monthly debt, that you research all of the options. When you consolidate debt, you're moving it into a new loan that you pay off, a loan with much more competitive interest rates. So you're not just throwing money away on interest rates and never paying down the principal. And because you're paying off your own debt, your credit's not going to take a hit. In fact, you might be able to increase your credit score. And if you're a homeowner, you can take the smarter approach and get started with a consolidation loan right now. American Financing. They've been helping so many people in similar situations over the years. They have salary-based mortgage consultants that continue to save customers anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a month. Why not see what they can do for you? Call American Financing at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
We're glad you're here. The divide is getting worse and worse in America. There's a new poll out. How do you feel about Republicans? How do you feel about Democrats? 61% of Democrats see Republicans, 61% see Republicans as racist, bigoted, and sexist. 31% of Republicans say they view Democrats with the same light. The percentage saying that at least they would be somewhat bothered if someone in their family married somebody from the other party. Democrats, 50%. 50% say they'd be bothered if somebody, you know, if somebody in their family married a Republican. 32% conservatives and Republicans say that they would be bothered if somebody in their family married a Democrat. About half of Democrats think Republicans are ignorant and spiteful. Half of Republicans, 49%, say that Democrats are ignorant and spiteful. 21% of Democrats think Republicans are evil. 23% of Republicans think that Democrats are evil. 22% who provided an open-ended description of Republicans, 22 included words like selfish, greedy, corrupt, spineless, fearful, and bad. How do Republicans describe Democrats in their own word? 26% socialist, angry, hypocritical, uninformed, power hungry, and violent. Here's the good news. 4% of us think the other side is fair. 3 to 4% say they think the other side is thoughtful. 2 to 3% think both parties think the other side is kind. By the way, all of those are within the margin of error. It could be zero.
Or maybe -1 in certain circumstances.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's interesting, too, that you know this seems to be getting so much worse. There's always been that divide, right? Like, I just feel like now people, have made it into their life. It dominates their life. We were talking about CNN a little bit earlier about how, you know, their coverage is obviously biased. I'm fascinated by how not even biased. It's not that. It's the obsession. They are completely obsessed with Donald Trump. Every single news story they make about him.
The fires.
It's incredible.
The number one story on CNN, the fires. But it is about Donald Trump's tweets.
His freaking tweets about the fires. There's 31 people dead. And the best thing you can think about to talk about is Donald Trump's tweets about the topic. That is incredible. And they just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Every story, every angle, anything you can do. They have professional people who are on those panels every day that just come on and make every story about this one man. This is not how our country was supposed to be designed. It's not supposed to be about a king. They treat him as if he's king, that he controls everything that they do. He's the president of the United States. He's part of one branch of government. He's ahead of it. He's an important figure in our country. There's no doubt about it that probably he comes up every day, right? There's just some story every day that's probably worth mentioning with the president of the United States. That does not mean 25 stories in a row every hour. It shouldn't be about that. Forget whether it's Democrat or Republican. We got to the point where with Barack Obama that we actually banned his name on the air because we were just it was too much. It's too much. People are obsessed over this.
We had a swear jar. We had a swear jar.
That's right.
How much did you have to put in?
You had to put in $25 every time
bucks?
Or $20 every time you said his name.
Yeah.
And so we had to get to very good at saying, well, the current president is.
Yeah. I think Pat at one point had to put in $1,000.
Oh, it was more than that.
And he was. But there was one time where he was like, I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it all day. And I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
And he ponied up. It's a sickness. And if you don't catch yourself, it'll just spiral out of control.
And
we felt a lot better when we weren't talking about him.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's not that those issues aren't important, but if you think about the way it's more serious than just, okay, well, Donald Trump is setting the agenda for everybody, I guess. And it's supposed to be a country in which that does not dominate. There's not one person with enough power to dominate everyone's life and conversation. And I think it's something where we've ignored the founding principles of this country as far as, how it was designed. In effort to pursue this sort of like, it's a sport, right? Like it's such a team thing that all we can do is talk about what the
religion.
Big story is, right?
It's becoming religion.
It really is becoming religion. It's going beyond sports. People compare, being a Red Sox fan or something to a religious experience or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it's beyond this.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for it. Donald Trump doesn't have control over the wildfires set in California. He has no control over that whatsoever. In the future, maybe he could change some policies that might help. He obviously has an opinion that the government has screwed it up in California, which I would, I don't know about his specifics, but generally speaking, would be pretty competent that government in California screwed up the issue.
I will tell you, I don't know his specifics either, but as someone who grew up in the West, it's a very different mindset. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and it's a very different mindset. Washington is so far removed from the problems of the land and the landscape that just growing up, you just knew it. If the federal government was going to get involved, they were going to screw the land up because they weren't good stewards of it. I'm telling you, the federal government has done a lot to help these wildfires burn out of control. But it's not the federal government's fault. It's a natural disaster. Can we talk about how to help people?
Beck. Mercury.
I've been sleeping on my Casper mattress for a while, and I would pick it over any mattress that I have ever had. In fact, I did pick it. I bought it, sent it to my house. I tried it for, I think, 5 days. I actually was honest, which I don't know if everybody appreciates this, but I said, I'm not sure I like it. Well, it took me a few more days before I really started to have my body settle down. I love this bed. It is Casper. It's a no-brainer. All you have to do is just order it and try it for 100 nights. If you don't have the experience that I have, they come and pick it up and they refund every single dime. So put Casper to the test in your home. The only way to test a mattress is by sleeping on it night after night, risk-free. For 100 nights, Casper.com/Glenn and use the promo code GLENN. That'll get you $50 towards the purchase of your brand new mattress at Casper.com/Glenn. Promo code Glenn. Get $50 off the purchase of select mattresses at Casper.com/Glenn.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I tweeted a story from The Blaze, I think it was on Friday or Saturday. Hollywood actor tweets in support of gun control, accidentally admits to breaking California law. There were many ways I could go with that story on Twitter, but it was about Ashton Kutcher, and I decided to go a different way. So I started a thread with him, and it was quite interesting to watch, especially the way it ended. I tweeted, no disrespect, Ashton. As you stated, guns are not for hunting or simply to protect your home. And for those who say you can't fight the U.S. government, see Afghanistan. Plus, school violence is down by 33% since 1993. Gun homicides are down by 49%. Gun crime is down by 75%. He responds, more lives are lost in 7 weeks in the U.S. to guns than 7 years in the Iraq war. Let's make this about data, Glenn. Okay, well, I did in the last one, but I didn't get hostile. I said, okay, let's. Now, first of all, Stu, would you please try to find any verification more lives are lost in 7 weeks in the U.S. than guns in 7 years? Because I cannot find anything close to that.
Yeah, stat. I mean, again, that's eliminating one entire side of the war, right? Like, if you're saying, I guess he's assuming U.S. troops, right?
No, I looked it up, even U.S. troops. I don't, it's not
Let
accurate.
Me look at it.
You look at it. Okay, so he said, let's make this about data. I wrote back, okay, let's. 10 people a day die in a pool in the U.S. 75% of those are children. We could eliminate almost all pools. Yes, the very rich criminal may still get their hands on an indoor, in-ground, illegal pool, but at a much lower rate than illegal guns. Also, suicide was the second leading cause of death among individuals between the ages of 10 and 34, and the fourth leading cause of death among individuals between the ages of 35 and 54. There were more than twice as many suicides, 44,965 in the United States, as there were homicides, 19,362. The reason why I brought this up, I'm missing one of the tweets, is because I said you're conflating numbers here. Also, overdose deaths from opioids, include prescription opioids and heroin, have increased by more than five times since 1999. Overdoses involving opioids have killed more than 42,000 people in 2016 alone. Remember, homicides are down 19,362. We also keep hearing about the shootings, when the truth is a kid is safer in school today than in 1990.
Much, much, much safer. By the way, I was in school in 1990. So I was actually four times as likely to be killed in a school shooting than kids are going to go to school today. That is impossible to believe. But yes, it is absolutely true. The only difference really is, just to make a quick point here, is that now we're talking about big media events, right? Now it's one kid shooting 13 people at a school, right? And that obviously turns into media celebrity type of event, which again, I argue is a huge driver of this stuff. If the media would stop talking about it, and we've stopped. We do not talk about their manifestos, except for very brief mentions if there's something vital. We never say their names. We don't go into all their reasoning because that gives them what they want. But beyond that, I mean, four times is safe. Back then, it was people picking off each other one by one. It was spread over a much larger amount of the schools. I mean, school, that it happened a lot more commonly because it wasn't necessarily these mass shooting events. They're scary, but they're built for media consumption, and that is a huge driver of this stuff.
So you're four times safer in school today than you were in 1990. And I wrote to Ashton, unless MS-13 is around, they kill four times as many people than mass shooters. And yet, Google MS-13. You will mainly find stories that are anti-Trump. By the way, MS-13 guns are illegal. Then he writes back and says, I'm not isolating the argument to mass shootings. Great. Neither am I. All gun-related death and violence down dramatically since 1990. If we want to make a difference, we should join forces to help those in places like Chicago, where strict gun laws haven't helped at all. How can we together stop the killing in Chicago? Then the last tweet is, on another note, I have great respect for the work you do on sex trafficking. I raised money to start Operation Underground Railroad, as well as the Nazarene Fund to free slaves in the Middle East. We may disagree on many things, but not on the value of freedom and human life. After that tweet, others got involved, and the tone by the end had completely changed.
Others got, why don't you tell us what his response, what do you mean others got involved?
Did I miss one of his responses?
I don't know.
That was his response.
So wait, so he came out and said, tried three or four points.
Yes.
Failed on all of them and then just stopped responding?
Yes.
That was the approach to the conversation?
Yes.
Was he playing his character from that 70s show?
I'm not sure.
Because I will say, too, that Ashton Kutcher has, you're right, done some good things. He said some things that I think have been beneficial. A lot of people just don't know. I mean, you know, when you're surrounded by a media that tells you the reason why we have shootings is because the NRA donated $5,000 to some congressional candidate, well, of course you believe this nonsense. I mean, you believe the NRA is in control of all gun policy in the United States, despite having literally no power. People can vote for whoever they want. The NRA doesn't make you vote for anyone. People can vote in whoever they want. And still, we're told this stuff. A lot of people, I would assume, particularly in Hollywood, believe it. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to believe it.
Well, did you see that some doctors were very upset and they said, you know, hey, you know, I see bullets in kids all the time. I work at an emergency room and guns have to be taken off the streets. Mm-hmm. And I'm an expert in this. No, you're an expert in pulling the bullets out of bodies. That's what you're an expert at. You may be an expert at witnessing the traumatic ends to illegal guns. However, when I tweeted back to this doctor, you know, where do you work? What are you in California? Are you in New York? Are you in Chicago? Because if you are, you're in the capitals of no gun zones.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you the bullets that you're pulling out at a high rate are from illegal guns.
Right. You know, there's a big article in the Washington Post. This one came after, I think, the Vegas shooting, but they've been updating it because, you know, it gets passed around every time there's another mass shooting. And it talks about the deaths. First of all, to your point, I think the same way. There's been 25 mass shootings in California. Well, California is a place that has the most restrictive gun laws in America. Maybe Connecticut and Maryland you could throw into that conversation as well. But California is right near the top of making it incredibly difficult. And the cities make it even more difficult. So it's a terrible argument to argue for gun control on mass shootings. The mass shootings are happening in areas with gun control. Of course, we all know that almost every single one of them happens in a place where all guns are banned for any purpose in a gun-free zone. But the entire state of California, which is the place, as the Washington Post points out, is the central location for the most of these mass shootings, has the gun laws that every liberal Democrat would wish to pass. It's a fever dream to pass in California what you'd get nationally. In fact, most of these things aren't even things that Barack Obama was asking for. They've gone further than even what Barack Obama was asking for, given the political realities of the United States and the diverse populations represented. So that is, gun control obviously doesn't prove that. But when you look at really like the statistics, I think they get down to 1,135 killed in mass shootings. That is way too many. It should be zero. We all know it. But you pointed out the pool stat, and I'm taking this for, I didn't look this up myself. What did you say? It was 10 per day, something like that?
10 per day.
10 per day killed in pools. That's 3,650 per year. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, no, it's more than that, I think.
I mean, whatever. It's a lot, and it certainly is going to pass what's killed in mass shootings. You're look, it is not comforting.
$10, 10 people a day, 75% of them are children.
It's incredible. And it's no comfort to someone who's, God forbid, been a victim of one of these, or have a family member mm-hmm. been a victim of one of these. But I mean, the bottom line is that these events are incredibly rare. The odds of you being involved in one of these are so insurmountable that it's almost impossible to stop them. It's certainly, I would say, impossible to stop these things in a country that already has 400 million guns on the streets. You go out there and try to, there's no way to stop them. I believe you can do some damage to this type of event. You can slow down these types of events through media. I think that's, we've talked about studies that have shown that would really do something. You can obviously secure certain areas, but all you're doing is you're going to free up those areas to the shootings to happen in other areas, right? Like, we all talk about school security because we're most focused on trying to protect children. Though, as you point out, it's four times more likely to be killed in a school shooting in the 1990s than you are today. But we talk about school security just because, you know, here are our most vulnerable people, and it's the hardest to deal with when it happens in a school. But if it didn't happen in a school and we secured all of them with giant walls around them and everyone wore bulletproof vests every day, they just go down the street to the supermarket or they go somewhere else. You're not going to be able to stop them completely. It's just not plausible.
And when you look at California and you look at Chicago, where we have so many gun deaths, what do they have in common? Despair. Emptiness. There is a problem. We know it. We can recognize a problem in the inner city in Chicago. We know there's a problem of fatherlessness. There's whatever. We know there's a long list. California. What's the problem in California? I contend the same thing. Dad might be at home. But those families are completely different in some of these major cities in California. And I don't mean, oh, there's two dads. I mean, the values are gone. The meaning of life. What is the meaning of life? What gives people purpose? It's very, very shallow water in parts of California. Let's have that conversation. All right, I want to tell you a little bit about FilterBuy. FilterBuy is a great company where they make filters here in America. They actually saved a family business and retooled this factory so they could save all the working people. And this town was built around this factory, and they were about to go down. And the owner looked at his wife, and it was her grandfather's factory. And he said, we got to do something to save these jobs and save this factory. So they built FilterBuy. Now they are America's leading provider of HVAC filters for homes and small businesses. You can choose from over 600 sizes, all made here in America, including custom options. And they'll ship free within 24 hours. If you're like me and you need the reminder, hey, dummy, change the filter. You get a 5% discount when you order and you subscribe for auto replacement. So you're never going to forget again to change your filters because they arrive at the doorstep. All orders ship for free within 24 hours. Save 5% when you subscribe. Set it and forget about it. It's so much easier than going to the hardware store or having to special order filters. FilterBuy. They're going to save you time, money, and help you breathe better at filterbuy.com. That's filterbuy.com. To our veterans, never forget. Thank you. Thank you so much for everything that you have done. There's a unbelievable story about our VA system, where many of our veterans are not even receiving any of their benefits now. It's so screwed up. We've got to fix that.
thank you, veterans, for doing what you do. And I want you to know there are people that really get it. I want to introduce you tonight to somebody that I had on a podcast on Saturday. His name is Rishi Sharma. He's 21 years old. He's from California. He was just an avid reader of history when he was a kid. Started reading about World War II and just fell in love with these veterans. And one night just called a veteran out of the blue. And he said it was like at 2 o'clock in the morning his time. And he said, "Hey, I'm sorry. I was," and he was 16. Is this really you?" And the guy's like, "Call me back tomorrow." So he's gone on the road now, and he has done these interviews, and he wants to interview all the remaining World War II veterans before they die. He does at least one a day, every single day. Listen to a bit of this interview. If we have it, Sarah.
I've interviewed just over 900 veterans so far, but there are definitely a few that really, you know, play in your mind after you've interviewed the veteran. And one in particular is a veteran who I interviewed out in Pennsylvania in the Pittsburgh area named Mr. Florentine.
What is your full name, sir?
David Joseph Florentine.
Where and when were you born?
I was born in New Brighton, Pennsylvania, January 21st, 1926.
At 16 years old, he was going in first wave on Tarawa, which is called the Beato Atoll. And basically, it's an island that's 800 feet across wide and just a mile long.
Wow.
And 3,000 Marines were killed and wounded in a three-day battle there. And about 25,000 Japanese were all killed. Only about 20 of them were taken prisoners. And Mr. Florentine, as he went in on the landing craft, his sergeant, Sergeant Yoakum, kept telling everyone to keep their heads down because they were taking on enemy fire. And the way Mr. Florentine was saying it, you could feel like you were there.
I don't know what made
Listen
him do
to
this.
The whole interview. It's about 90 minutes. You can hear it online now. And it's at the Glenn Beck podcast. It was Saturday's podcast. Also, tonight, 5 p.m., just an incredible story from an incredible 21-year-old man.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. It is Monday, and we have with us a guy who played for the New York Jets, Los Angeles Raiders, former, obviously, NFL player, and Super Bowl champion. Yes, I just had to check his fingers, see if I could see the ring. Yeah, Super Bowl champion. His name is Burgess Owens, friend of the show. He's been on with us for a while. He has a new book out called Why I Stand, From Freedom to the Killing Fields of Socialism. How are you, sir?
Glenn, good seeing you again, my friend.
Good seeing you.
Good to be back.
First of all, let's introduce your friend here, and we'll get to your story here in just a second. But this is Mac
White.
White. Okay. Hi, Mac.
Hi, how you doing?
How are you? Welcome.
I'm good. Thank
glad
you.
You're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so tell me about the idea behind this book, because you are, you say it like it is, 1910 NAACP.
Well, you know, Glenn, the book basically highlights the fact that what we've done together is remarkable. We have a country that from the very beginning was based on what we the people can do together.
Mm-hmm.
And the history that we've lost is what we've done regardless of race, because we have such great hearts. We reach out for those who are needy, those who are at risk. That's been our nature. And the reason why I brought Mac with me today is because we need to get that done again. We need to realize that there is an invisible generation out there of kids that have not been given the opportunities that many of us have gotten. They've not been taught about respect and commitment and love and all those things that we kind of take for granted. And once they get it, they will be our strongest advocates for our American way. I think that's going to be the generation that will bring our country back.
And before we get to the solutions, which is the main point, but you point out that this was intentionally done to African Americans.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what we have to recognize is we're in a fight for the heart and soul of our nation. The Judeo-Christian values we have are very unique. We're the only country that's ever done it this way, and that's why we're the greatest country in the history of mankind. At the same time, we have an adversary, the socialist, Marxist, and atheists, who are anti-God, who wants to destroy us in any way possible. And for those who understand the history of the black community, one thing, for instance, that I don't even know if you know this, but in 1905, Tuskegee Institution, what we've talked about quite a bit, led was producing more self-made millionaires than Harvard, Yale, and Princeton combined. And this is the way Americans do it when we have freedom, hope, and opportunity. And every race has done the same thing. Those things we have not heard about. But that race, that community, was purposely undermined because it was such a threat to the leftists. So that the leftist piece is still there. They're now still attacking our country, have destroyed basically the black family, and we'll get it back. We're in the process now. We have young people like Mac, who's super committed to his family, and I'm excited about what he represents.
Okay, so Mac, let me hear your story. Tell me about yourself.
I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. Lived in foster homes. My mom was separated from my mom when I was probably like 4 or 5. She had me at 20. She kind of wasn't ready to have a child. So I had to deal with the consequences of that. And I lived with my aunt for a little bit, then basically jumped around from house to house, staying with my dad or, you know, different girlfriends he would have. Kind of really no stable place all the time, because him and my stepmom had like a dysfunctional relationship. So it was always a lot of fighting and going on, and a lot of arguing. They never really learned how to work things out. So it was always he would just leave and pack up and leave, and we'd go stay somewhere else, or I would get dropped off somewhere. And just by the time I was probably a teenager, I started getting involved with, you know, drugs and gangs and hustling, because my dad didn't have a job. And his girlfriend at the time, she didn't have a job. So I kind of was like providing for myself for like clothes and food. And when I was 16, I dropped out of high school. And then by the time I was 16, I was charged with 2 counts of aggravated robbery. And I was sentenced to 3 years, Texas Youth Commission in Gainesville, Texas.
How'd that work out?
Which one? The
prison.
It was rough. It was rough. But at the now that I look at it, I think that was the best thing that could ever have happened to me, just because the simple fact that I was just on this path to destruction. And it was just because I had no hope, you know, just growing in the community that I grew up in, and the environment and the household, you kind of just grow up hopeless.
So what was the turning point? You found hope in prison?
I didn't find hope in prison. I found just realization with everything that I believed in the streets. The everything that I was looking for in there was the same thing I wanted in my household. It's just that I didn't find it in the household, so I went other places to go find it. It's kind of like a teenager that feel like they can't talk to their parents about something, so they go talk to a friend. But, you know, they might talk to somebody the same age as them. So it's kind of like the blind leading the blind. You're not going to get the best information from that person.
Right.
But that's just the only person at that time that you feel like you can run and talk to. So with my situation was the guys that were in my neighborhood, the ones I felt like I could talk to that could help me, that I would get that love and everything I was looking for in a family out of those gangs or, you know, the friends. And I mean, being 13, you can't really have a job at that age, and we're not taught how to fill out applications.
Right.
A lot of us can't even read. We don't know about finances or anything. The only thing we know is just what our community has to offer. And 9 times out of 10 is selling drugs or robbing people, the only way to survive. And that's what we see growing up as kids. I always say, like, I always like to say that a lot of kids never come out of the womb throwing up gang signs or, you know, any of this stuff that a lot of people, and it's something that is taught. And, you know, it's easy. Kids are so vulnerable. I mean, the first person to get to them is going to have the biggest impact and going to be able to change their mindset to where they want it to be. And that's what you have a lot of times in those environments too as well. But it's just a cycle, because those people are just doing what was done to them.
Can I just say, because the key is, there's something that happened that allowed you to change that trajectory. And why don't you explain that to Glenn? Because this is really, when it comes to we the people, what we've done as a people to help mm-hmm. each other, that's really, I think, what I think we can highlight with Mac. So explain mm-hmm. what happened that got you out of that the trajectory you're heading into.
As far as like when
Carmen,
I got out.
Carmen okay. and Steve.
And all right, so when I was in jail, it gave me a lot of time to reflect on a lot of things that I did. And then I start realizing that those things I believed in, those people that got to me first when I was a kid, that I believed in those things. And when I saw what those things got me and that this was the end point right here is jail or either a graveyard, I had to start finding a new way of thinking, but not knowing how to because I didn't have anybody to teach me.
My father said to me when I was young, I said, I'm never going to be like you. And he said, son, I'm proud of you. I didn't want to be like my father either. He said, but if you don't find someone to model, you will be exactly like me. And that's kind of the problem. You don't have any place. So where did you find the model?
Okay, so when I got released from jail, I received a card from a lady that was a co-founder on a project called One Heart. And she sent me a postcard that had the One Heart project, like the label of like, the, I guess they were going to do a film. And it had like all her information on the back, basically wanting me to contact her. So I did. And then when I contacted her, she basically asked me a lot of questions and just asked about my crime, how serious it was, asked me, what was I doing now? Where did I want to be in life? And just basically just having conversations, just seeing where my mind was. And I didn't think anything of it. I thought she just wanted to talk to me and then have something to tell at the end of the movie or something like that, like from a real actual person that was at the game. And she ended up contacting me again, and I met with her and her family. Mother's Day, they drove from Dallas to Houston. It was just me and my dad. Because when I got out, I went back to the same environment that was
that brought you into prison.
Exactly. So that was one of those things. It was like I got out and then, hey, close the door, you know, figure it out. And luckily I was blessed enough to actually what I like to consider her my angel. She came and she asked me to did I want to come live with them, and she was going to help change my life.
Holy cow, that is risky.
Yeah. And it was scary for me too, because I don't want to say this, but I can't help it. It's not common for a white person to want to come help a black kid, especially a young black kid from where I'm from, because either they hate us or they fear us. You know, nobody really takes the time to understand us or understand our situation. And a lot of times I feel like the media portrays that because the news only shows you the two gangbangers that had a shootout, but they don't never do a story on those gangbangers 10 years ago when their dad was in prison or their mom was strung out on crack and they had to find ways. It's some crazy stories. If a lot of people would hear them, a lot of people would say, I don't know if I would have been able to make it through that.
Yeah.
You know, so just going through that. But back to the topic, I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, that's okay. So how has your life changed now? What are you doing now?
So it's changed. When the lady took me in, she put her hand on me, on my hand, and she said, if you come with me, I will take your life to a level you never thought was possible. And at the end of the day, my whole reason for finding that realization that I need to change my way of thinking, I felt like this was what I needed right here to help me completely change that and then also take action. Because I actually wanted to make some out of my life. I just didn't know what I wanted because I never dreamed past 21 because I didn't think I would make it to be 21 or even be a free man at 21.
What do you do now?
I do acting, modeling, I do speaking, like mentoring, but individually, like on my own with like younger people that I've encountered with that I want to help.
Can I say this? I've taken Mac has spoken to about 30 young people in the juvenile system, and they are mesmerized by his story. Because what he does best is leave the message, if I can do it, you can do it. He takes away excuses that you can't. He takes away the thought you cannot make in this country. that this is a place you have a second chance. If given it and you go for it, you can change your life.
I don't know anybody that could make it in today's world, especially African Americans, after being told all the time, young girls now, you're not going to make it. It's the system is a rape culture. It's against you. I wouldn't have, I mean, I grew up in a poor family and my father was, you know, a small businessman, kind of a failing businessman, Willie Loman kind of guy. Suicide in my family, divorce, blah, blah, blah. We've all had our share of problems. But the one thing that was instilled in me was you can do anything you set your mind to. And if you don't have that, and in fact, you have a society telling you this society is against you, you'll never make it because of them. And see, you don't have a chance.
And my story is I grew up in the Deep South, Tallahassee segregated community, KKK and Jim Crow. And a very successful community, though, because in that community, there were people who believed in our country, they believed in God, they believed in the family unit. And their goal was to show those who didn't believe in them that they can make it happen. So for me to look back 50 years later and see the message that you see, you're so correct. The messages are so different now. For us to tell young people like Mac that you can't make it in this country is stealing their dreams. Mm-hmm. It's the worst that Americans do to another American. And yet we have it. It's almost a business now. People make millions of dollars by giving the message of hopelessness. And so this is why we have to recognize if we're going to change the trajectory of our country, we need to make sure our kids know that this is the greatest place in history of mankind.
Tell me about your great, your great-great-grandfather?
Oh, great. Thanks. Great-great-grandfather, Silas Burgess, came to this country in the belly of a slave ship in 1848. Sold on an auction block in Charleston, South Carolina with his mother. His mother either committed suicide, took her life, or escaped. She couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
The heinous things was happening to her. Mm-hmm. And so at age 8, he was an orphan. But he had men around him that believed that they still had hope. And they escaped. Took the southern route of the Underground Railroad, wow, facilitated by Mexican and German Americans, and made his way out to Smithfield, Texas, where he became a very successful entrepreneur, owned 100 acres of land, bought it 2 years. Started first black church, first black elementary school, pillar of his community, Republican, proud American. Mm. And that is what the American way is all about. It doesn't matter how we got here, as long as you have hope. And that's what people like Mac, I think, is the future of our country. They're finding out that this is a place that can make it if given the chance, if given hope. And once they get that, it's like the Harriet Tubman that I've come to love when I was a 12-year-old kid. She not only escaped, but went back 20 times, mm-hmm, helped 300 people because that was her love and empathy for people. And that's what Mac is doing now. He's going back and telling his kids, you can make it, you can do it. I'm here to help you. We'll make it happen. And he'd helped his four or five of his friends to come out after they came out of the same situation. And that's the heart of Americans. So we continue to do that. It doesn't matter what color we are. It's who we are. It's those values we have inside of us that say there's a God in heaven, that if we do the right thing, we give as much as we can, that we'll be blessed, and they will be blessed in the same process.
Thank you for coming, Mac.
Thanks, you
can see it in your eyes. You are a good man. You know how you can look people, you know, eyes are windows to the soul. Mm-hmm. You know, look at somebody, you're really a good man.
Thank you.
I'm happy that that you took the risk and this woman took a risk. She's still alive?
Yeah, she's here.
She's here?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to bring her in.
Come here, and there's also Steve, who's also the founder of One Heart, co-founder of One Heart.
Hang on just a second. I'm going to take a quick break. I just want to say hi to her real quick. We have to have her in. All right, our sponsor this half hour is Relief Factor. Relief Factor is something that will help you if you are in pain of any sort. We have people who are on sports injuries or whatever. It reduces inflammation. It's 100% natural. It has four key ingredients. And so it's not a problem to take it. It's natural. So if you're in pain and you have constant pain, I know what it's like, and you kind of feel your life slip away from you. It is so worth $1 a day. Now, this is a trial pack. You can try it for 3 weeks. It's $19.95. You try it for those 3 weeks. If it does not work for you, you're out $19.95. If it does, and it does for 70% of the people who try it, Continue to do it every single month. You take three packs a day. This these little all natural pills. It reduces the inflammation in your body, which is the main source of pain in our life. It's drug free and an easy way to get your life back. Go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. We're back with Burgess Owens, who brought a young kid. How old is Mac?
Mac's 29 now.
29.
Yeah.
And he was just telling us a story that when he got out of prison, he met you, Carmen. And he said, it's really rare that somebody actually cares. And you reached out and said, I'll help you turn your life around. What do you do? What is this?
So it has a backstory. I had previously helped, my ex-husband and I had helped a guy from the I Have a Dream Foundation.
Uh-huh.
And we put him through a private school and just watched him blossom. He now has a family and a beautiful job and, you know, just a great, we had a great experience with him. But Steve is not like Mac. Mac was very chill on your show. Mac mm-hmm. is like Will Smith. Like, he's huge, big, big, big. And so he has such a strong personality that when I pulled him in, he kind of pushed me to help all of his friends. Wow. So it wasn't just Mac. We helped. When I was working like front lines of One Heart Project, there was probably 14 people that we were getting jobs, getting them cars, you know.
And you've seen lasting impact?
I have seen absolutely lasting impact. I would trust Mac in any situation. And his friend David, who is his best friend, who's an MMA fighter now, and just... They're contributors now to society.
Right.
Can I add to this? Because the problem we're having in our juvenile system, there's a 70% recidivism rate. 70% of those kids go back within months. What One Heart has done, because of the curriculum and the way they change the way these kids think, and people like Mac helping along, they've gotten down to 18%. This is Baylor University's keeping up status statistics for One Heart. So the key is not just being busy; it's having impact where these kids can really change the way they think. And therefore moving forward and have an impact on others like them.
The name of the book is Why I Stand, From Freedom to the Killing Fields of Socialism by Burgess Owens. Burgess, if I get you to stay just one more second, because I want you to talk about your theory behind, you know,
NFL.
NFL and kneeling. It's quite an... I think you're right. I think you're right. Why I Stand, available in bookstores everywhere. We're talking to former NFL player and Super Bowl champion, Burgess Owens, who's with us. By the way, congratulate Stu on his Eagles win over the weekend against the Cowboys.
They looked really good last night.
Oops. Oh, no, they didn't.
It's been a repeat of every single game this year, and it was a pleasure to watch yet another one. So.
Nothing's really changed. You got one, though.
I, you know what? You got the one. Super Bowl, finally. Finally, no thanks to you, by the way, on the first one. But we'll take it. We'll take it here.
So Burgess is the author of a book called Why I Stand. While we're on the NFL, tell me what you think is going on with the NFL and the kneeling.
Okay. First of all, we have to recognize NFL is not the same as the days we grew up. You know, Al Davis and Pete Rozelle, they're globalists. And globalists basically do not prioritize our country. They see their profit, their profitability across the world, and that they've done purposely the last 3 years. Wonder why it's taken 3 years for them to figure out how to deal with this flag thing. They wanted to mean the NFL brand, very simply, because they have places like China, France, Mexico. There's over 68 countries that already have a presence in, and they're looking at having the Super Bowl in London. So at the end of the day, they want to make sure they demean the brand enough so it's accepted in China and all these other places that don't really care too much for our country. It's a global stretch. They don't mind giving up or sacrificing these kids' careers. That's what they're doing. These young men are not only sacrificing their careers today, but their brand. When they leave the game, they will not have the same power of to move forward as those days.
Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I mean, so, he's done pretty well for himself.
Well, and what they do is the whole idea of use, abuse, and discard. He will be discarded eventually when they figure out they don't need him anymore. The leftists are very heartless people because it's all about themselves. And so you understand the NFL, What I'd like to do, I see the NFL do, is apologize for the last 3 years. I think at that point, they're trying to do now is trying to move forward. They just had a big thing with Veterans Day where they're mm-hmm. showing how proud they are. Mm-hmm. And you don't see too much of this crisis right now. They've been mm-hmm. able to push that down. They want us to forget what they've done the last 3 years. It's just like the Democratic Party does the same thing. They have been a menace to the black community for centuries. And they want to kind of help us forget that they were the bad piece of this process. So I would love to see the NFL not only apologize, but tell us what they did with the $90 million that they put into this social justice. Where is that now? And how's it being used? And I don't think we'll ever find out how that's all worked out.
You know, when you said this, when we were off the air, I was like, that is I can't believe I didn't think of that. People don't understand in America that we are just a market to many of these companies now. When it comes to NFL, you know, we're a market. You know, we're just one of many, and they've maxed out their growth here in America. So now, what do we do to get Mexico and other places around the world to accept NFL like soccer, yeah. World Cup? And that's really what's happening. I'm glad you brought that up. I would have never thought of that.
Well, and I mentioned this when we were off air, but the commissioner just got signed a contract of $40 million per year. Keep in mind, only 10% of that is $4 million is guaranteed. The rest, 90%, is based on growth. Their growth started tailing off 3 years ago. They capped at $3 billion in the United States, and they're going south ever since. So they have to get that internationally. You wonder why Nike stepped in. Well, Nike gets all their money in China. That's where their big payday is very little bit comparatively speaking here in the United States. So if they were to put Colin Kaepernick as the Marxist he is as their brand, yeah, the champion, it's very attractive to Chinese people. So
have you heard that anywhere, Stu?
No.
No, really, Brian.
You have to really have to think through how bad these people are to really get to what they're capable of doing. And I think American people haven't gotten there yet. They don't quite understand how devious the leftists really are.
Do you? I mean, your book is full of stuff like that. But I want to I want to take you to a more positive place. That you say, how long have we known each other? 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say just in the last 4 years, the world has changed in the black community. What do you mean?
It is. I am so excited about what's happening. I think the greatest present to our country was President Obama, because he showed how much of a failure liberals and socialists and Marxists can be. We have people in the black community that has so much hope that he's going to be the savior. And when he failed after 8 years, they realized, wait a minute, what happened here?
You never hear about his failures. Now, how do you mean
he failed? Well, when you look at the fact, I'm going to give you just a couple, just so you know mm-hmm. how bad things have gotten. 75% mm-hmm. of the black boys in the state of California cannot pass standard reading and writing tests. 83% of black teen males for the last 8 years could not find jobs. 70% of black men forsake their families. I mean, go to the litany. You go through the increase of welfare. What the leftists do is they understand that misery is how they get their power. So they do everything they can, and they lie. They'll pat you on the back and give mm-hmm. you a big hug as they're giving you misery. But what's happening is that now that we're where we are, black folks realize my misery didn't go away. So you have a President Trump who, of course, doesn't do it politically the way it's supposed to be done, mm-hmm. but the results are there. We now have more less unemployment than ever in the history of our race. We're now talking about education. We're talking about prison reform, which has never been talked about. All the things that now bring hope to people, we're now finding. And we have many young people now, not just the older folks who came from the generation I did, where we saw the success. Mm-hmm. Younger people are getting it. And they're leaving this. There's a Blacksit now. We're leaving. Black leaving the Democratic Party. There's a walk away.
Really believe that's happening?
Well, what's happened?
To a real significant extent?
Here are the numbers. We have 16% of black Americans that were for candidate Trump. Is now 36% for President Trump.
I've never seen that with a Republican or conservative candidate.
Yeah, well, because blacks are feeling it. When you start to see jobs coming, you start to feel hope, it's a whole different ballgame, and we're just getting started. My goal, very simply, is two things. It's education, and it's ownership. And ownership basically is not just being entrepreneurs, but it's owning your future, realizing that you can actually make a difference in what you do and be accountable for your actions. We get that message, which is now going to be starting to happen in the Black community. And we'll be the community that we were back at the turn of the century, where we were literally the example of what can happen when a community got it right.
Have you met African-Americans who have read your book and see things like, for instance, just talk about the NAACP and the way it started?
NAACP was started back in 1910. It's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The problem is it wasn't started by colored people. It was started by 21 white socialists, Marxists, atheists, race-controlled Democrats. Mm-hmm. And they had a black socialist, W. DeVos, who was a facade. And they did, through stealth, they got into our community and switched our community. At that time, was leading our country in the growth of the middle class, capitalism, patriotism, you name it.
It was the most successful, even in the 1960s, it was the most stable family in the country.
That's exactly right.
I mean, what happened from slavery up until about 1920, 1930-ish, with the black Americans was amazing what they did. And then it was just dismantled.
Well, Glenn, you've talked to your audience. I've heard you talk about Black Wall Street.
Yeah.
We talk about Madam C.J. Walker, who's the first female self-made millionaire in our country.
People would say that that was Oprah Winfrey. It happened a century before her.
The first black millionaire on Wall Street was in 1840, and he died in 1875 with a wealth of $250 million today's dollars. So there's a cess going on. We don't hear about it. That's what the left does. It's called, it's what Karl Marx said, the first battleground is the rewriting of history. You steal our history, you steal away the vision of our future and our pride in our past. And that's what they've done. So we're going to get that back.
So when you have people who are African-American who read this, do you have, and don't know what you do, do you have them come back to you and say, oh my gosh?
I've had some. I think, though, what I love is that I'm not the only voice out there now. This is what's exciting to me, Glenn. That might have been a deal 10, 15 years ago that I would have been a big, big deal because this is such a new voice.
Right.
Like the Shelby, there's a few guys, Walter Williams, and a few others.
Right.
Now I'm just one of many voices out there. And so it's nice to see that people are reading. I think, though, the key is the venues like this is what we, the people, do. It's not just black voices. Is black and whites together doing things and realizing that color has nothing to do with it. We all have issues. We're all trying to get through this thing called life. And if we give back, no matter what color we are, we all win at the end of the day.
I just think you're a miracle in today's world, and I'm always pleased to have you here. The name of the book is Why I Stand: From Freedom to the Killing Fields of Socialism by Burgess Owens, available everywhere.
Thanks, Glenn. Good seeing you, Anthony.
Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Simply Safe. Simply Safe is a great security system for your house. It's going to save you a buttload of money. How much are you paying for your security now?
One buttload I'm paying currently.
Really?
Yep, one buttload.
Yeah, better than two buttloads. Mm-hmm. And if it's a right-sized butt, I mean, if it's a small butt, if it's a baby butt, not so bad.
I guess actually I'm paying one buttload plus $14.99 a month.
Really?
So this will save me one buttload.
Right. Okay, good. So that's what I promised.
Exactly. You were right.
So $14.99 a month for the 24/7 monitoring for your house. And then there's no contract. And you own the system. So when you're paying $40, $50, $60 a month for your security, what you're doing is you're paying for the security system. When you see what it actually costs for a security system that is much better than the one that you currently have in your house, it's going to blow your mind. It's actually going to make you a little angry. But then just look at $14.99 and go, oh, my gosh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. SimplySafeBeck.com. Smart way to protect your family. The new way to protect your family. Welcome to the 21st century. SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. For anybody who watches The Blaze on television or online, if you're watching or listening to us at theblaze.com, we have an issue today, and we're not the only ones. Some of the major networks are also having the same issue. The company that, I don't want to get all technical, but it encodes all of the information that sent it up to the satellites and the internet and everything else. This is all they do. Their building is on fire, and everybody's been evacuated. And so we're having to run everything here and just hopes that they don't cut the power to that building. And if they do, we won't be the only network off.
It's incredible what's going on out there. I mean, people can't get to their work. They can't, you know, place. It's just incredible that this keeps happening.
Yeah. This is up in Connecticut.
Yeah. This is a separate fire. Oh, wow. I just assumed it was part of the California.
I did too until I said, well, what are they going to, you know, how are they? And they said, well, they think they can put it out. And I'm like, it's a really
giant wall of fire.
They should have done that earlier if they could have. But anyway, so bear with us if you're listening to us online or watching the network. We hope that it will be under control.
You been following the latest on all of the elections?
Somewhat. It's not looking good.
It does seem like Arizona is in big trouble.
Yeah.
It looked like a victory for McSally on an election night that seems to be going the opposite direction. 30, not decided yet.
30,000, I think, in the other direction.
In Florida, still Scott would be favored in these races, mm-hmm. And DeSantis as well, to hold on. But they're going to go into this recount world, and you know who knows what happens
there. I don't understand what's happening in Broward County. They're the only ones that can't tell you how many people voted. And they had a court order to provide that by
Friday. Palm Beach had an issue with it, too.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, again, legally required. People are like, oh, well, we just want all the votes to be counted. That's a nice thing to say. However, what they're requesting is just the legally required information about how many ballots were cast, not whether they should count them or not. That's not even, it's not what the Republicans are saying, like, hey, throw out a bunch of votes. We don't want those counted. There's no one requesting that. They're saying you have to live up to your legal requirement to tell us how many people actually voted and the information associated with that.
And the reason why they want that is because that way you can't just come up with more ballots.
Here's another box of 12,000 ballots, right?
Right.
You can't do that.
How many people voted? That should be a pretty simple number to come up with. Not a two-week number. They were supposed to provide it at the latest by Friday evening.
And these races will be counted. And it's not completely irregular for these races to be counted for a long time. Arizona, California in particular, is well known for a very long process because I think the way they have it is your mail-in ballots just need to be postmarked by election day. So they can come in 3-4 days later. I think it was all the way up to Friday. So a lot of those races are turning. I mean, some races that were called for Republican House candidates are now being uncalled,
so
and those races are back in the picture.
If this continues to go this way, it could actually turn into a blue wave.
I mean, you know,
a small blue wave.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like they could hit between 36 and 40 seats as a positive for Democrats. Now, this would
be... The Tea Party had 66 seats.
Not that size, but
right.
of the last 14 midterm elections... This one, and this is when we thought it was low 30s, so I haven't looked at it since, but when it was low 30s, it would be more Democratic, more change, you know, a bigger wave, if you will, mm-hmm. than 10 of the 14 previous midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so losing 30 seats is not nothing. There was a huge structural advantage for Republicans, thankfully, in the Senate, which allowed them to hold where they are. But now look at this, where this stands. Rick Scott is in trouble. I think he's going to win, but it's still in trouble in Florida, and God only knows with the recount process. Looks like Arizona's going to go down. That leaves you at 51, which is what they have now, right? So they did not increase at all. 52 will likely be Mississippi. That's, you know, very likely. And 53, possibly Florida. Arizona would be 54, but their range is now 51 to 54 seats. They already had 51 with a huge structural advantage. If they wind up with 51 or 52 out of this thing, I mean, that is not a huge, that's not a win. They lost governorships. They lost a lot of state seats as well.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. I mean, now some of the good thing for Republicans, I guess, is a lot of the high profile races they did hold on to. Obviously, we talked about Beto a lot. We talked about DeSantis over what's his face? I can't think of his name. Gillum in Florida. And Georgia, the governor race, it looks like they're still, that one's still tight, but it looks like they're going to hold that one. But this is not a win, I don't think. I think the longer we get into this process, the uglier it actually looks for Republicans.
I just want to make sure that it is a legal and fair process. And I'm not convinced of that yet. At least in Florida, I'm not convinced.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.